Back together again, you and I, of course, midweek Wednesday style, December 13th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We talked to open the show about some national possible movement on the immigration issue. Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist Dan Haar dropped by to talk about the hot issues of the day, as he does every Wednesday in the 5 o'clock hour. And Quinnipiac University social media expert Professor John Powers chatted about a push for parental control over certain smartphone applications.
So I'm honestly a tad surprised here on this Wednesday. Now, this story broke right before we wrapped it up yesterday. Broke right around the 5 o'clock hour. Had a lot to do. Frankly, didn't notice this. But maybe this has something to do with our own junior U.S. Senator Chris Murphy being in on these delicate talks on immigration here. And you remember yesterday I said I was a little uncomfortable, just a tad squeamish about the Republicans in Congress in D.C. with an election year coming up saying, hey, we're not going to help Ukraine out any further. We're not going to help Israel out any further unless the White House okays more funding and more regulations for the border. And I was like, geez, I don't know. Do you want to do that in an election year when, you know, the Democrats are likely to say, well, look at the Republican Party, which does filter down and trickle down, by the way, all the way from the national races to the local races here in Connecticut, state house, state senate, and even hyper-local races, too. I mean, the Democratic Party makes sure that happens. And if I was one of them, I'd do it, too. But apparently they you know, this rolling of the dice may be working here, and maybe the House under the new leadership of the Speaker Johnson there, who a lot of Democrats don't like. They don't like him because he's a hardliner, but he comes over as a nice guy. He doesn't, you know, come over like Jim Jordan. He doesn't come over as a Kevin McCarthy. They're not condescending. He's not smarmy. He's just kind of like, you know, he's a real conservative Christian guy. But maybe he's got, shall we say, the testicular fortitude that Republicans have been yearning for. Reason I mention this is that the White House said late yesterday that it would be willing to support a new border authority. In this version I'm reading here from CBS, the White House apparently is, maybe, when you think about it, actually caught between a rock and a hard place now. And the White House indicating that it would be willing to support a new border authority to expel migrants without asylum hearings. The Dems are going to hate that. Their heads are going to start exploding. As well as a dramatic expansion of immigration, detention, and deportations. This all to convince Republicans to back aid for Ukraine. How about that? Man, oh man. So maybe the present batch of Republicans knows what it's doing. In Washington, maybe I was wrong. Maybe this is not the circular firing squad here. The White House informs Senate Democrats, so they're kind of laying the groundwork here. I don't know if anything further on this will happen today. But again, our junior Senator Chris Murphy is apparently in on at least some of this or all of this. This is what he told us on the weekend gab shows here. I don't know if Mr. Blumenthal has anything to say about this, but Chris Murphy certainly does. The White House informing Senate Democrats it could back those sweeping and hardline immigration policy changes as part of the talks over an emergency funding request, $100 billion. It's all just money now. It's the zeros are there. I don't care who you're supporting or not. The zeros keep piling on. $100 billion. That includes military aid to Israel, Taiwan, and Ukraine, as well as money to bolster border enforcement and hire additional immigration officials. Well, how about that? How about that? For weeks, a small group of Senate members have been trying to reach an immigration enforcement deal. Republicans have conditioned any further assistance to Ukraine to policy changes designed to reduce the level, the unprecedented levels, it says here. Kudos to CBS for actually putting that in the story. The unprecedented levels of illegal crossings along the southern border. In recent days, says here, again, I'm reading the version from CBS, Mr. Biden's White House has intensified its engagement with lawmakers. Homeland Security boss Alejandro Mayorkas starting engaging with talks in the Senate this week. And now let me get to some specifics here. By the way, are you happy about this? Not. Maybe you lean a little further left in the immigration thing. All comers are welcome here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. The White House indicated it would support a new far-reaching legal authority to allow border officials to summarily expel migrants without processing their asylum claims. Oh, my God. The left is going to go nuts about this. They're, if you can hear, listen, hear that? Hear it? Their heads are cracking right now. The White House says it would support a new far-reaching legal authority to allow border officials to summarily expel migrants without processing their asylum claims. The measure would effectively revive Title 42, the Trump-era pandemic order. Oh, man, they're going to need medication after that. And allow U.S. officials to pause asylum law without a public health justification. Oh, my God. Here come the court challenges. I can tell you the immigration advocates, they never say illegal immigration advocates. They just say or migration advocates. We have immigration advocates. We've had immigration advocates in this country for, what, 100, 150 years? How about this? The White House would also back a nationwide expansion of a process known as expedited removal, allowing immigration officials to deport migrants without court hearings if they don't ask for asylum or if they fail their initial asylum interviews. The program is currently limited only to the border region. There's more. But wait, there's more, like those guys tell us on the overnight infomercials. The White House would be willing to mandate the detention of certain migrants who are allowed into the country pending the adjudication of their claims. Mandate detention? Does that mean they're going to set up more camps that AOC can go cry in front of? I'm sorry. I don't mean to be flip about this, but boy, you talk about an about face here. Well, look, they are backed into a corner. They need money for Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine's running out of bullets. I don't care what people say. You can't go easy on Putin. Might they have to cede some land? Maybe. And I guess privately, that's what the White House is saying. But wow, you talk about a... You talk about a 180 here, a bat turn. Remember watching Batman growing up? Of course, you had to send out the bat parachute pickup. Remember that? That's old school. It's not... see, this is... you're going to mandate the detention of certain migrants, but it says here in the next sentence, it's unclear how this provision would work since the government has never had the detention space to detain all migrants who cross into the country illegally. Are they talking about setting up massive camps, detention camps? Oh, man. The progressives, they're honestly, they're going to go nuts. They will be screaming in the streets. Administration officials and some Senate Democrats have also previously indicated a willingness to raise the initial screening standard for so-called credible fear interviews that migrants may have to pass to avoid being deported under expedited removal. Gee, what a thought. You may have to have these interviews be more credible. In a statement, White House spokesperson Angelo Fernandez-Hernandez said the White House did not have, quote, determined policy positions in the congressional negotiations. The White House has not signed off on any particular policy proposals or final agreements, he said. The president has said he's open to compromise, and we look forward to continuing conversation with Senate negotiators. Now, understand something, too. And I can't wait till the weekend, because we're probably going to find out if Chris Murphy is in the weeds with this. Is he in the middle of this? I mean, he was talking about this last weekend, a few days ago. I think he was on MSNBC over the weekend. He may have been on another one of the gab shows or the talk shows. So we'll see if his fingerprints are on this. I'm sure he will likely be on the weekend shows in the coming weekend, but this is interesting. So we'll see what happens. Now, the bottom line is, listen, they need the money for Israel and for Ukraine. But again, understand something. They're also, the White House is, and Democrats are, they're also looking at a wave of members of their own party. Eric Adams, Democrat mayor of New York City. Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago. Katie Hobbs, the Democratic governor of Arizona, basically looking at the White House here and sitting there saying, we are getting overrun here. We need help and money. So maybe this is a scenario now where if you are in the White House, if you are part of the Biden White House, and you're sitting there at night saying, Mr. President, these numbers at the border are just getting crazy. Is this a scenario where you think the White House probably says, well, all right, and let's frame it as the evil Republicans made us do it? But how about this? Again, this broke just as we were wrapping up yesterday. And I got this on an alert, and I said, really? They're going to be willing to support an authority to expel migrants without any asylum hearings? And then also try and set up a way to hold everybody crossing the border until they can figure out what to do with them. Good luck with that. Although it'll be fun to watch. What do you think of all this? Is there a sincerity here? Or is this kind of a bait and switch? All righty, you and I back together. Hey, we'll get to open phones next half hour, so pile in there. I've got a bunch of other stuff I want to get to in the stack today. More crazy polling here. But speaking of crazy, insane, and somewhere in the middle, all the stuff going on in and around the great state of Connecticut. Dan Hara is with us every Wednesday, middle of the week, right here at this time at Connecticut Today. Dan, columnist and editor, Hearst Connecticut Media. Mr. Hara, good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
Good afternoon. It's pitch black out there at 5:15.
I know.
The solstice is next week.
Yes, and then we can add. We Dan, you and I can start adding a few minuscule seconds of sunlight every day. It'll be the low point.
The low point of the winter is when it's darkest, not when it's coldest. So I'm looking forward.
See, you study this stuff. This is why I have you on. Speaking of having you on, Mr. Hara, what is on your mind today? Do I see something about a strike of janitors or janitorial people? What's going on with that?
It's premature to say there's going to be a strike. This is a routine that the 32BJ SEIU, Service Employees Union, does. When they're in a tough negotiation, they have rallies, and they hold what we know to be a strike vote. So on Saturday, the 3,200 unionized janitors in Connecticut under SEIU are going to authorize their union to strike if necessary at the end of the month, if on December 31st they don't reach a contract. And this is a tough contract because the janitors do all right. They make decent money. They make $18.50 or so an hour, depending on the market and where they are. A little less in New Haven because there's not as much union activity there, 16 and change there. but they do okay, and they have paid vacation, they have pensions, they have fully paid health care, so they do okay. They're on the edge of the middle class.
Okay.
But the building owners are crying poor because, as we all know, the buildings are not as occupied as they were. And so, you know, both sides have a lot to lose here. And that's what's going on in the negotiations.
Interesting, yeah, because, again, if you do the math with the benefits, it's about $40,000 a year. Plus, they probably get some overtime, which, again, nobody's getting rich on that. But, right, Dan, somebody's got to do that job. It doesn't. Buildings don't clean themselves.
You know what baffles me in this? You know what baffles me? Mm-hmm. That if you're a janitor and your job is in an office building at night, you make the same money as a janitor in Yale New Haven Hospital.
Hmm.
Or more, because that Yale New Haven is not unionized, as we saw from those protests. But so it's amazing to me. The quality of the work has got to be, I mean, cleaning in a hospital is dangerous work.
Yeah.
Right. And cleaning in an office building is difficult physical work, but it's not dangerous. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. You're making 40 and you've got great benefits if you're a unionized janitor. And if you're in a couple, a household that has two such incomes, you are solidly in the middle class unless you have some circumstances. But the question is, can they remain there? Can they keep those benefits? Can they keep those jobs against pressures that the building owners face to cut costs with less occupancy in those buildings?
Dan Haar, the guest, every Wednesday at this time, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, I know something you mentioned to me earlier today, which I had talked about yesterday, and I kind of get where Governor Lamont is coming from this, coming on this. He wants a test case for the Connecticut law that would ensure a woman can come here and have an abortion. The only thing that kind of rubbed me a little wrong with this, Dan, is that if you're a governor, and I understand where he's coming from politically, I get it. I kind of said yesterday, well, don't you kind of represent everybody in the state? And you have to kind of take into account the vast left, center, right opinions on abortion. And I kind of said to myself, Dan, what would it be like if, for example, and this would be out of line too, I think, if Governor Greg Abbott in Texas said, hey, all you disaffected gun owners in the state, come on into Texas because we'll sell you AR-15s. Well, what do you think of the governor's invitation on this?
Well, they've done that. Remember when Malloy was governor, mm-hmm. Governor Dan Malloy was governor of Connecticut. He had the back and forth with what was the
Rick
the
Perry
Texas governor?
Was it Rick Perry?
Yeah. Okay. Rick Perry, who forgot the name of the agency he was going to close.
Yes.
He had the back and forth with him over guns, and he had the back and forth with a governor by the name of Mike Pence of Indiana over abortion. So this back and forth between blue state and red state governors is not new, and there's absolutely no downside to it for Lamont, because he knows that it's about signaling, right? And Governor Ned Lamont doesn't have any constituents who particularly care that he's inviting women who can't get reproductive health care to come to Connecticut for reproductive.
There may be
A small handful, but they're not voting for him anyway. So there's really no downside. And this is part of the culture wars that is, I think, frankly, healthy. I don't think it's healthy that we have a national crisis in which there are half the states where women can't get reproductive care.
Yeah.
I don't think that's healthy. But I think the debate is reasonably healthy. I kind of wish it hadn't happened if Dobbs had been upheld, but that's the way it goes.
And Dan, I want to get your thoughts on this. Speaking of debate, we've got this, and I had a couple of reporters on this yesterday covering this kind of a weird story, Dan Haar in New Haven, with this woman who she claims she was told to report the immigration status of some people, and now the mayor is turning backflips, and the woman is not saying anything, and, you know, who told her to do this, and now you have the sanctuary city issue here. What are your thoughts on this? Because this, to me, and this is one of these issues, Dan, that if you read the commentary on this, no matter what publication, this is one of those things that people are really split on here. And this incident here is just interesting to look at from afar.
Well, that's a tough one. And you're absolutely right. It's an interesting case My colleague Elizabeth Moore is covering those cases for the New Haven Register. And the issue is this woman, Ms. Clark, who is the city employee who was suspended, I believe. Is that right? She was suspended?
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's not on the job right now. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. And, you know, so the question is, whose law must she uphold? Right?
Yeah,
is she
yeah.
obligated, you know, as you know, in some respects, the functions of cities are really functions of the state that are carried out by the cities, marriages, that kind of thing. And in some cases, they are city functions. So if the city says you can't ask people for their, for example, immigration information, and the state says you must, it's complicated on several different levels. Number one, the state of Connecticut itself may not clearly be demanding that information because the agencies of the state may differ. As you may recall from some years back, Office of Policy and Management had a big immigration tiff with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, again under Malloy, in which we were supposed to turn people in, and we didn't. And we said, you know, we told them what side of the tracks to sit on when they asked us to turn people in. And so the ultimate core question is, what is the law? And when the state says one thing and the city says another, it ain't easy. And it's going to be sorted out, and everybody has their opinion. To a moderate degree, it shouldn't be a terrible thing for the government to ask. I'm not entirely completely to the far left on this.
Yeah.
It's not unreasonable for a government agency that is sanctioning, for example, a marriage, to say, you know, what's the information that you can provide to us? On the other hand, some of that is none of the government's damn business.
Good thought, Dan Haar. Dan, thank you. Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist. Dan, have a happy week, a great weekend. We'll chat with you next week.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate the time, Dan Haar there. All right. Something I talk a lot about on this program, the presence of social media. And now, how do we keep control of all of this? There was a recent survey from Morning Consult about this. Should parents have more control over this? Joining us right now is a gentleman who we've had on the program before on this topic, Quinnipiac University Professor John Powers. He directs the Graduate Interactive Media and Communications Program at Quinnipiac. John, it's Paul here again. Good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
So, John, now what is the issue here? A new survey came out, but I know now, John, there's a push to maybe give parents or those older than 16 the purvey here to allow downloads for young kids to kind of protect them from some of the tawdry stuff and the bad stuff or stuff that's not age appropriate. What's going on here?
So there's been a push, and as you mentioned in your intro, there is extraordinarily high support from all different types of groups to have legislation that would require parental approval to download for a younger person, a child, to download a social media app. So it's not only sort of protecting young people from what we know is, you know, are dangerous or things they shouldn't be seeing at a certain age. But this is really sort of magnifying the issue of the mental health ramifications of social media and the need for some control over that with younger people.
So, you know, John, that's the kind of thing where I think you and I can agree, and a lot of folks can agree, that whether it's a book or a movie or types of music, there's an age-appropriate level for all those things. I mean, this is why we have a rating system still for movies. This is why we have parental advisories on, you know, hardcore rap CDs and heavy metal CDs and stuff like that. So this idea, John, in and of itself is not new. The question, I guess, is the pushback here, and where is that going to come from? Is this going to be battled on the floor or maybe in the back rooms of Congress with all the high-paid lobbyists here?
I mean, this is interesting because even many of the social media companies have come out in support of this. Instagram has, you know, is backing this movement. Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook and Instagram and et cetera, have been hauled before Congress and have taken a lot of heat over the continual evidence being shown that their platforms cause mental health issues, especially for young people. And again, this is not just necessarily that they might come across some sort of content that a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old shouldn't see. As you mentioned before, movies and explicit music and all that kind of stuff. But this is just the idea of the mental health ramifications of normal social media activity.
I'm as big of a free speech guy as the next guy, John or gal. I think it's a core aspect of our society, but you can almost bet, John, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, that if this gets further down the road, because we see this with, you know, allusions to banning or restraining TikTok, for example, a lot of the people against these sorts of things, John, whether it be getting rid of an app like TikTok or giving parents more control, they do kind of resort to the free speech aspect of this, which I find that interesting.
100%. And this goes back to the idea that we do live in a society, a country with a First Amendment, and where people do have the choice to take in the material they want to take in and also be able to speak freely. And yet this is sort of this issue and what's coming before our legislators, hopefully, talks about protecting children from the dangerous effects of social media and just giving parents the right to approve or not approve their child accessing some of the apps on their phone.
Does Europe, John, and or the European Union, I tend to see this a lot, do they do a better job of regulating this and whacking around big tech when they need to from time to time? Do they do a better job of that than we do in the U.S.?
I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, I guess it's all, again, you know, where you fall on the free speech argument. It is an issue where here in the United States we have this constitutional right of free speech and also this frontier mentality of I will make the decisions about what's good or not good for me or my family. This, I think, with the issue we're talking about here, I think crosses the line a little bit because it's very popular on both sides of the political spectrum, because it is giving parents the opportunity to approve their child accessing certain apps. And I think that appeals to many people on both sides of the aisle.
All right, we'll see what shakes out with this. John, thanks. Professor John Powers directs the Graduate Interactive Media and Communications Program at Quinnipiac University. John, thanks. Good to speak with you down the road. Again, I'm sure we'll hook up. Thank you, sir.
Paul, thank you so much.
All right.
Have a good night.
Thanks. Appreciate it. You too, sir. Drive safely. So there you go. John directs the Graduate Interactive Media and Communications Program at Quinnipiac.